Welcome to the Flynn Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is the Flynn Tracy recording. It is 1:06 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 2nd. Well, Bitcoin today certainly had a big move. It was up almost six. Well, it was at one point it was above $5,000. So that was it closed out on the day up about 630. That clearly completes the base formation that it's been putting in over the course of the last 5 months. So there's obviously something that is moving the price, but there hasn't been a great deal of news to explain exactly why the price is rising. But what we have seen is a great deal of commonality among some of the larger, or perhaps a better way to describe it is the more promising or cryptocurrencies, because there are at least seven or eight of those that have got some of the higher pass-through rates. In terms of processing power, have been hitting new recovery highs in the course of the last week. So that's, I think, rather important. When we look at it on a somewhat longer time frame, well, it helps to put into context just how much it declined, and that this is the biggest upward dynamic we've seen since at least the June period back in 2018. There is, of course, still a sequence of lower rally highs, and the downtrend is still intact. But the fact that we are starting to now see bullish activity coming back in, particularly after a very inert period of trading, then that's, I think, looking to be rather positive, and it suggests that there may be something to think about in terms of why these things are starting to come back in. One of the things that I've been thinking about in terms of market sentiment and how we start to see themes emerging is in terms of commonality among various asset classes and also among what on the face of it might be disparate sectors. The fact that Bitcoin is starting to turn around and cryptocurrencies generally are starting to perk up again is also occurring at the same time that the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is pressing up against its highs. Then we have the fact that Cisco has been racing higher over the course of the last few months, and it was an additional upward territory, or excuse me, new highs again in here today. And the recovery there has been driven by the build out of 5G. Basically, Cisco built the internet in the 1990s, and they're building the 5G network now. When we look at Xilinx, then that's also clearly benefiting from the continued demand for 5G instruments, so that's also a significant factor. And I wonder if we think about what 5G in fact represents. It's an additional layer in terms of the internet. It's going to represent a very significant overlay in terms of the number of web-connected devices. It's also going to represent much faster connection speeds, so that's an additional factor. And it could potentially be an enabling factor in terms of the build out of the internet. When we think about and I saw this graphic in an Oppenheimer report recently. It highlights that we do tend to have computing cycles, that we go from centralized to decentralized, back to centralized, and that the potential for fog computing, which is basically moving some of the computing power away from cloud-based data centers more towards the local area network, and the development of blockchain would be a decentralization. That's potentially what we could see in the next round. And that could potentially then help to explain why cryptocurrencies are starting to perform more in line with 5G type of investments than anything else. Well, when we think about the fact that it's going to be companies like Verizon are going to be some of the telecom providers that are the first to provide these services. AT&T is another one of those, which is in the on the cusp of launching its own 5G networks, and it's just about testing its downtrend over the course of the last 3 years now. But this does have the potential to be a very big market, and it's probably going to be sometime towards the end of this year or early next year when we actually start to see 5G becoming a much more commercial entity, because that's when these products are going to get launched. Now, when we look at the wider market in here today, then we've had the S&P 500 in positive territory, and the Nasdaq was in positive territory. The Dow was in negative territory because of Walgreens pulling back so sharply. But this continues to represent a recovery scenario, and as long as the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to higher lateral ranging. Now, we are in the region of potential areas of resistance represented by the January and late summer peaks. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we're going to get a deeper process of consolidation in the not so distant future. But as long as we start continue to see what might be termed large cap growth shares outperforming, then that's likely to be a bullish phenomenon for markets generally. Now, when we think about what's happening in terms of the bond market, well, the yield has been unwinding the bond market's short-term overbought condition, but and there is certainly some additional room to unwind more of that overbought condition. But this is still a clear trend from the peak around 3.25% down to what is now below 2.5%. There is a clear progression of lower rally highs on this chart when we shorten up the yield or the duration and look at the 2 year. Then we've had a very clear downward break, and this is definitely pricing in the potential for a rate cut. But the growth in the global economy is starting to pick back up again. So this leaves a number of central banks in a rather questionable situation. If they have even the remotest question about whether they're going to, or if there's any doubt as to whether they're going to raise interest rates, well, then the reaction from the stock market is likely to be very swift, and we could have a substantial pullback. So that suggests that central banks are going to be very wary of raising interest rates, even if we do see global growth starting to pick back up again. But then you have to, I think, bear at least some consideration to the fact that we have had the very short and very long parts of the yield curve inverting, and that historically has been a long lead indicator for future recessions. It's not usually until central banks do in fact cut interest rates that the stock market takes fright. And that makes logical sense, because stock markets are doing rather well at present for the simple reason that the bond market is pricing in a rate cut, but the global economy is still okay, and there is the potential for re-acceleration. The DAX index today, for example, was in clearly positive territory and up about 1%, and this has been one of the laggards regionally, and it is coming back towards that 12,000 level, which was the lower side of that overhead head and shoulders peak. In fact, this is about as textbook an example one could have for measurement in terms of the distance from the peak to the neckline and then down again. These aren't the kinds of things that we talk about very much in this service, but it is certainly something that other technical analysts will be very wary of, the fact that it is coming back up towards the 12,000 level, which is the overhead point of overhead resistance, is obviously going to raise some questions among investors as to whether it can in fact get back above that level. When we look at the banking sector in the Eurozone, it was in positive territory and it has held a progression of higher reaction lows over the course of the last few months. It is still below the trend mean, although it has broken the downtrend from the beginning of 2018, but it's at least going to have to push back above the trend mean in order to really confirm a return to demand dominance. Looking at the reweighting of the autonomies fund that I co-manage, what I found particularly interesting is that despite the fact that the bond market is pricing in rate cuts, a number of the banks have perked up over the course of the last week. Citigroup, for example, is back around the upper side of this range that's persisted for much of the last 2 months. Morgan Stanley is in a reasonably similar condition, that is coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. But when we look at, for example, the regional banks index, then we also have seen some steadying, but it's not nearly as high up in terms of its range as some of those bigger banks. But of course, they're much more internationally oriented, and the regional banks are much more influenced by the availability of credit domestically. And we're going through a period where there is a reordering going on, I think, between what is clearly starting to outperform. And we certainly have, for example, evidence of that with Starbucks. Starbucks had broke up out of what was almost a 3.5 year range at the end of last year, and continues to extend that advance. Disney hasn't quite been able to break upwards yet, but there is a clear sequence of higher reaction lows within this range. And having closed the merger with part of Fox and now on the cusp of launching a streaming service, there is potential here for this range to represent an explosion waiting to happen on the upside. And what we've definitely seen has been the clear outperformance of the kinds of companies that generally benefit from the growth of the global consumer. So on the one hand, you have LVMH, which has really been the clear outperformer in terms of the luxury goods recently. But on the other side of the equation, we've had a significant number of the drinks companies doing well. Diageo, for example, has been trending higher now in a pretty persistent manner for a couple of years, and it's at clear new highs. Well, this continued outperformance of these companies that are highly leveraged to global growth suggests that global growth is probably all right, and not least because China is back on a reflationary mode. Well, the A-share index was not up in a particularly dynamic manner in here today, but it is certainly holding the breakout put in yesterday from the 1 month range. This continues to look like a clear recovery scenario. Meanwhile, the Indian market, which is, well, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that India represents the demand growth profile for just about everything over the course of the next 20 years, because they've got so many people and such a young population, and the obvious growth potential as a result of that demographic dividend is going to increase demand for everything. So the Nifty index is right in the region of its peak. Now, we do have an election over the course of the next 6 weeks, and we're not going to have the result until probably towards the end of May. But the stock market is already voting that the Modi administration is going to retain their majority, and that's really quite a profound success story if from an electoral perspective, if they can in fact do that. The Bombay Banks Index is just about the only banking sector in the world that is at new all-time highs, and that's a really very significant development. It really, I think, clearly highlights the potential for India to continue to outperform, and also that we have a credit growth story going on in the Indian economy, driven by those demographics that you just don't have anywhere else. And that's, I think, that's one of the clearest bullish indications that we have here, that we certainly have a reflation trade it going on in China, but China's demographics are nowhere near as positive as India's are any longer, and that you do have the governance in your favor when you invest in India. That doesn't mean that necessarily one would want to live in India, but that is rather beside the point from an investor's perspective. Then, when we look at the commodity complex, what I think is really quite interesting at present is the fact that oil is trading in a backwardation right across the curve. So, oil producers have absolutely no incentive to hedge. And that's bullish for the price, because the time when shale drillers will be most active in hedging out production for anything up to 3 or 4 years will be when you get a contango again. But you're not going to get a contango again until supply increases. And the reason we have a backwardation at the moment is because OPEC is not producing as much as it can. And there are supply bottlenecks in Texas. Some of those are about physical infrastructure. Because of the quantity of oil that's being produced in the Permian. But then you also have the fact that there are impurities creeping into the supply chain as a result of mixing blends or mixing the oil that's coming from different oil producing or oil wells, and then also that the sand and mud and chemicals that are used in the drilling process are getting mixed in with the oil. So, two cargoes have been turned back from South Korea because of impurities. Now, that's also a bottleneck in terms of getting that oil to global markets. So, therefore, there is the potential here that prices could rise further, and this remains a reasonably consistent advance. The primary consistency characteristic of this advance has been that it hasn't pulled back by more than $7 since December. So that's one of the clear bullish characteristics of the market right now. Gold prices were pretty stable in here today, but we haven't had a clear upward dynamic to really confirm a return to demand dominance at the lower side of this range, and we do need an upward dynamic to really confirm that demand is returning to dominance in the region of the trend mean. Silver prices today were just below the $15 area for about half the session, but rallied intraday to unwind just about all of the decline. $15 does represent an area of support. It was also an area of resistance between August and December, so it's a natural area where we can anticipate some support starting to come back in. And palladium, having pulled back very violently for 2 days last week, has been up for the last three, but that rally hasn't even unwound the last day of the declines, and what it does suggest is we do have an acceleration and a massive reaction against it. So it's quite likely that we have seen a peak of at least medium-term significance for palladium in here. Then when we look at copper prices, sorry, and put in the wrong code there, we have a first step above the base forming, but the price was in negative territory in here today. It needs to push back above the $3 area in order to really set the world alight again. When we think about the iron ore market, well, a reflation trade in China is obviously positive, and Rio Tinto has now broken up and away from the 4500 P level. So that takes out the 2011 high and brings into focus the peak put in back in 2008. This is one of the things that is characteristic of a late cycle phenomenon, is that you get resources sectors doing better, and BHP Billiton is also at a new recovery high in here today. So that's clearly betting on the success of the global economy. And the FTSE 350 mining index has now closed above the 20,000 level for the first time since 2013. So this has been a jolly long range with a very clear V reversal back in early 2016. And that suggests that there is ample potential for additional upside, and that I think it's quite likely that the 2011 peak is going to be surmounted. So that is also what we tend to expect, is that you get a very strong late in the cycle rally by the resources sector, and that it usually persists well after the peak in the nominal stock market index, that you get these from reasonably depressed levels, you get a clear return to dominance by the resources sector. So that is supportive of the view that gold should be doing better. And when we start to then think about an alternative scenario for why Bitcoin should be doing better, well, it is an asset that is not easy to replicate. And against a background where there's a clear potential that central banks are going to be inhibited from tightening, and that the more likely scenario is that they're going to have to loosen some, monetary and tolerate looser fiscal stimulus, then that is likely to benefit the prices of fixed assets. And certainly are, I think, hard assets. Gold is certainly one of those, and Bitcoin does tend to be lumped in with that hard asset type of argument. So I think that those are perhaps the main points that we have in here. I think China is certainly on a reflation trade, and there is the potential that they're going to agree to a trade détente at least, because their long-term objective is global dominion. And that, and I think the clear conclusion is that they're not ready just yet, so it's much more in their interest to deal today so that they can achieve their longer-term objectives in the next 20 years. Well, that could potentially be really quite beneficial for stock markets over the next couple of years. The clear risk, and Howard Marks has done a good job of elucidating on that in his most recent memo, which I'm posting today, is that we do get the rise of tax and spend type characters in terms of the electoral process in a substantial number of countries. And that is, I think, the clearest risk that we have to stock markets over the medium term. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.